This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to another Joy 94.9 podcast.
In this Joycast, you'll hear a summary of the weekly program. Due to copyright restrictions, the music has been edited out to make this Joycast possible.
For more information about the music played during the show, please visit the blog at joy.org.au/The Fool and the Opera.
You're on Joy 94.9 and it's The Fool and the Opera. Thanks very much for joining me for another evening of wonderful music. And I can let you know that it will be wonderful music because I'll be playing it for you. Now, this week on the show, we've got a Baroque King, Queens Rocking and Queen Rocks. It's National Youth Week at the moment, and this is the second week of, for me, it's the second week of National Youth Week. For everyone else, they just had 1 week. I get two because we're so youthful here on this program. And I have the young and beautiful coloratura soprano, Lorena Gore, joining me on the show today. We had an interview with her early in the week, so we'll be playing the highlights of that interview with her. And for those of you who don't know, she is the Queen of the Night in Mozart's The Magic Flute, which opened this Saturday, just yesterday, in the Arts Centre. So it's a wonderful production of really amazing sort of when I sort of tell you about opera and how all the things sort of come together in terms of design, costuming, and of course the music. This is one of those productions where everything just comes together and you're just dazzled with an amazing array of just, I don't know, gloriousness for 2 hours, or maybe a little bit more than 2 hours. It is opera after all. Now we've got of course, talking to Lorena Gore, we will be talking about how she sings up high on a suspended moon and she has to stay very still while singing to stop herself from rocking. And to sort of, you know, kick off, I thought we might play, because I always like to play with a bit of an interesting track that starts it off. Oh, I should say, by the way, I am The Fool. For those of you who haven't listened before, The Fool in the Opera, I make up the fool part. And for the quote for this week is, "Don't fool with fools who turn away." And it comes from an excellent song, which you may know from Queen. It's called Good Company. And it's from their album, A Night at the Opera. So I always like to start the show with a bit of a crazy track, and this is the track for this week. And I thought that it'd be a fitting sort of song that I'll dedicate to my audio producer, Jed, and Tim Long from The Spin, because I just came back, just got right off the plane from Adelaide and went right in here. We've been working on a little job in Adelaide with the two, and they were very good company. So this is The Fool and the Opera on Joy 94.9.
Said to me as he puffed his pipe and baby B dandled on his knee, "Don't fool with fools who turn away, keep all good company. Oh, 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 take care of those."
Love the ukulele sound. It's I don't know why they don't have ukuleles in orchestra. They really should. It's such a wonderful little instrument. And you know, the point of the story, Good Company from Queen, from their album A Night at the Opera, there's the connection, is that you should just spend your life with people who are good company. You know, don't worry about all the things like money and making, you know, a name for yourself and your reputation. Really, the thing that counts the most is making sure that you're surrounded with good people and good company. And I think a person that really lived that sort of, I suppose, a motto for their life as well, sort of living among good company, is a wonderful mezzo-soprano from Brisbane. Her name is Margareta Elkins, and just this week she passed away, and there's been some stories coming out already of how wonderful she was. You know, Brad Jarrett from Opera Queensland, where she started sort of her career in Queensland, was said that she, you know, she was of the old school, someone who really understood her own voice. She was tall, she was good looking, with great legs and a huge stage presence, and really had the ability to draw all eyes to her. And the sound that she made was amazing and special. And her Elkins was has sung some of the most the greatest names in opera. So Maria Callas, Joan Sutherland, and you know, many more around the world. And she was also a principal at the National Opera, at Covent Garden for 10 years as well, in the Royal Opera House over in the UK. So that's quite a big thing. And I thought that we should play some music from her, because it really is, you know, when you have somebody who is that amazing, you really, I think, need to pay tribute to them. So I've picked a track that sort of keeps the whole royalty theme, the whole rocking theme. It's going to be a piece that she sang in Rondolinda, or Rodolinda, which is a Handel opera. So it's Baroque. Baroque, and she sings it as a king. So, you know, I needed to balance out the show a bit today. We couldn't have all queens, and so we need to put some male voices in as well. But, of course, because it is one of those, is it 18th century? Yeah, one of those 18th century operas, it's, it of course, is sung by a female, because these days there are very few men who can sing the castrati voice, because, you know, we don't do that to men anymore, which is a very good thing. Now, in Rodolinda, which is the opera that we're about to play this piece from, and it is in English as well, so you can understand it, hopefully. It is a bit difficult, but if you put your ear close to the speaker, it helps you interpret it better. Now, in this opera, a king in Italy has been usurped by his brother, and the king of Lombardy has been usurped by, and that's Bertardo, has been usurped by Grimoaldo, where, of course, they had parents who, you know, we're very good at giving them easy names to pronounce for presenters of opera. And in this particular piece, Bert laments the fact that he is now no longer king, and he calls out for his wife to come to his rescue and to save him from the torment. You're on The Fool and the Opera on Joy 94.9, and this is going to be Margherita Elkins singing as Bertardo in Rodolinda. Love those scratchy old recordings. They're wonderful little things. It's just, you know, I like it sometimes when you bring out the old school technology. And and of course, the performer that we just heard was Margherita Elkins, who recently passed away, age 78, and a wonderful performer from everything that I've read about her recently. And she died of cancer in Brisbane, in fact, on Wednesday. And I wanted to just quickly mention the fact that there is an opera that is going to be in Melbourne very soon called Avatara, which is going to be about... it's got six performers in it, and it's going to be the stories of five people in it. It's going to be five personal stories of people who have had life-changing experience, and cancer has been the catalyst. So, you know, of ordinary people sort of transformed into these people of resilience and strength because they have endured, I suppose, the tragedy of cancer. So it's going to be something that we'll definitely have a speak with the composer about, Emma O'Brien. So that'll be coming up in a few weeks. But as I said, Margherita Elkins passed away this week, and she was an amazing person. And right to the very last day, apparently she was still teaching opera and still singing as well. And just about 7 years ago, at the age of 71, in 2002, she also performed for Opera Queensland in Cavalia Rusticana. So, you know, someone like that, they're amazing. And just to see that sort of passion in people sort of right throughout their life is just really amazing. And I got to catch up this last week with a wonderful performer, Lorena Gore, who is very young and is very beautiful as well. And she's certainly got the passion for opera as well. And we talked about the Magic Flute, which is what she's in Melbourne to perform. She's performing as the Queen of the Night, which is I've played the Queen of the Night a few times on the show, and it's, you know, it's a really beautiful piece. And I don't think I'll play that this week because we've played it so many times, unless you'd like me to play it. And if you want me to, you can always text in 0427 Joy 94.9. 9499 is the SMS, or give us a call. Brendan is on the phone, so you can give him a call, 9699 2949. But there's also email, so onair@joy.org.au. Do you want to hear the Queen of the Night again? Just let me know, and I'll unearth it if you want. But I do have the first aria that the Queen of the Night sings in the Magic Flute lined up, but I've also got the interview with Lorena Goy, which is just a great interview. So coming up right now is Lorena Goy. It's the highlights of the interview, and you're on The Fool and the Opera on Joy 94.9. Lorena Goy is an award-winning coloratura soprano who recently had her role debut as the Queen of the Night with Opera Australia in Sydney. This week, the show goes south, and Lorena joins us to talk about the opening in Melbourne. Thanks for joining me, Lorena.
It's my pleasure.
Now, let's start off with a very basic question. What is a coloratura soprano? What does that actually mean?
Well, a soprano is a female singer who... actually, sometimes a male singer as well, who sings at the top of the voice, so a lot higher than other voice types. And coloratura is basically something very florid, so there is lots of sort of little notes, lots of runs and things. So.
And in terms of singing, is that something that is quite difficult to do then, to sort of sustain those high notes and all those florid movements?
Yeah, well, for me, it's always something I've loved to do ever since I was a child. I loved sort of singing. And my first singing teacher at 14 taught me how to do it. She used to give me lots of scales to do as practice. So right. I've never kind of really been sort of worried about doing sort of very fast passages.
Right.
But yeah, no, I really enjoy it.
Okay, so it just comes naturally to you then, that style?
I think so, yeah. I think... because I started doing it at such an early age, it just has always come very naturally to me, and that's where probably the strength of my voice is. Each singer has a different thing about their voice that is good, and for me, my strength is definitely the coloratura, which is why I'm doing a role like this.
Yes. So in this particular role, the aria, which is the most famous one with those really high notes, I don't know, they come out quite quickly.
That's right.
Is it challenging for you to sing it then?
It is, yeah. It's something that I really need to practice a lot, yeah. Especially since I've only just recently had a baby. But it is a challenge, but it's such an amazing piece of music as well that it's quite exciting for me to get up there to be able to perform this incredible music that people love so much.
How do you approach the role? How do you prepare? You say you practice the aria as it is, or do you sort of take little segments of it and sort of repeat it over and over?
I definitely do focus on certain passages more than other passages. The coloratura sections are what is most difficult, so I tend to practice those more than the other sections. We do have lots of coaches here at Opera Australia, so I've got lots of people to sort of go to when I need to run through things.
Right.
But I remember coaching this role with an amazing Queen of the Night, Krista Lehman, who used to do it previously with the company many years ago, and she always said that to sing a top F, she used to warm up a top G. So she'd actually warm up a little bit higher,
right,
so that when she actually came to sing it on the stage, it didn't feel quite so high. So I try and take that principle on board, and I do try and warm up my voice as high as possible before I do a performance and have to sing those incredibly high notes.
Does it hurt to sing those high notes?
No. I think the thing about singing is it should always feel good. It should always feel comfortable. It's hard work. It's like any performer using their body. It's such a physical thing that it's so physical and hard work. But it doesn't really hurt. And I think if it does hurt, then there's something that you need to look at. You're either not singing the right repertoire, or it's a technical thing that you need to fix.
Right. And when you sort of sing, where do you feel the sort of voice starts from? For coloratura, is it different to a standard opera singer, or is it simply the same set of muscles that are being used?
It's the same set of muscles, but it's a different flexibility that's required. But essentially all singing sort of comes from the same place, and having good breath and good support and just being able to sustain that with your voice on the top, and obviously trying to make a beautiful sound, which is something that, you know, you do need to practice, and you do need to have lessons, and I've worked really hard, and hopefully it's okay. But yeah, it's having, I think, good breathing really is the key, because there are certainly long phrases that you need to be able to sustain your voice over the course of the whole phrase, and you can't sort of let it drop at the end.
And in terms of talking about muscles, now there's a physical theatre group who is involved with this particular opera.
That's right.
And
Legs on the Wall.
Yeah.
They're fantastic. In fact, I love watching from the side of the stage. And when we're actually in production rehearsals at the moment, I love nicking around to the front of the stage and in the audience and watching them work, because it's just so amazing to see how they use their bodies. They're all sort of dressed up as animals, you know, and they sort of fly from ropes hung from the roof and everything. It's just, they really add another kind of element to the show that's really fantastic. Mm.
And is there an expectation of you to do some of that stuff as well?
Well, I don't have to fly on any ropes, but I do fly on a moon. They do actually have a large moon that I do fly in on as such. Well, not fly as in on broomstick, but they have me harnessed up to it, and it does come from the very, very heights of the stage. So
you're not afraid of heights then?
No, fortunately not. I don't think you could do this role if you're afraid of heights, because it's pretty high in that theatre.
Both musically and also physically.
Both, yeah. And that's actually one of the challenges of this role is I'm actually sort of seat belted into this harness for the moon, and I can't really move too much because it will swing, which can be quite dangerous. It's actually great being up that high because I can see sort of different parts of the audience. I'm actually on par with sort of the people sitting in the higher parts of the auditorium. So, yeah, it's really interesting.
You're on Joy 94.9 on The Fool and the Opera, and as the sun sets and it goes really dark, I think that sort of music is really, it just sort of sets the scene for you and makes you tingle a little bit, doesn't it? Now, that is, of course, O Zitter Nicht, mein lieber Son, from The Magic Flute. Tremble Not, My Dear Son is the aria, and it's the first aria performed by the Queen of the Night. The second aria is called sometimes the Queen of the Night aria, De Holle Racht. Not sure what the translation is yet. I will find out for you. Is one that we've played a few times on the show. And as I said before, if you want to hear that, I didn't think I was going to play, but I've had one request already from Petro saying that he'd love to hear it. He's enjoying the show at the moment. And if you want to hear it, just let me know. 0427 Joy 949 is the SMS. Email on air at joy.org.au is the... No, that is the SMS, and the email is on air at joy.org.au. I just said that. I just say it so many times now that it sort of just rolls off my tongue without even realizing what it is that I'm saying. But the aria is from The Magic Flute, and it's a really amazing piece of music because the Magic Flute in itself is a really... It's quite a bizarre opera, and it's quite interesting. It's the last opera that Mozart ever wrote. He wrote it 2 months before he passed away or he died, and it's a really strange mix of, I suppose, fairy tale. There's a bit of myth in it. There's some Masonic allegory as well. He was always trying to get into the Freemasons group. That sort of, it was a very secret society at the time, all about, I suppose, equality of man. People kind of could stand shoulder to shoulder no matter what background they were from. But they also had very strange rituals as well. And you know, there's a lot of movies about Masons at the time, and some of them are overplayed. But I suppose if you kind of think about The Simpsons when they had the Stonecutters Club, that's what sort of people think about when they think of Freemasonry in Mozart's time. You know, all these men kind of getting around and singing strange songs together. And the Magic Flute sort of borrows a lot of material from all these different sort of ritualistic elements from Masonry, and also a lot of music, I suppose, from choral style music, and also laments from Handel, who did laments very well. So he kind of has blended all these different styles in together, and it's a beautiful work. And it's quite an interesting opera as well, in that it sort of, the storyline goes all over the place, and there's animals involved, and you know, this magic flute, all these beasts and beings come out of it. And interestingly enough, Mozart's least favorite instrument was the flute, so that he would write an opera about his least favorite instrument is interesting. But there's also a few interesting points in the plot as well. You know, there's two attempted rapes, two attempted suicides, an abduction, incitement to murder, numerous instances of sexual discrimination, and inciting racial hatred. So it's it's a very fun opera to see. It's light, but also very dark, and there's a lot of things to think about in it. So look, the Magic Flute is at the State Theatre at the moment, being performed by Opera Australia, and the production that we've got at the moment is a very good production as well. It's done by an European director. His name's David Freeman, and he's brought in a theatre group, a physical theatre company, Legs on the Wall, who usually do some amazing things, running up and down walls, and they they've got really great outfits and all that sort of thing as well. And, you know, one of the things that I always sort of say that you get to see in opera is sort of this convergence of all the great arts. There is dance, there is song, there is music, there is costume, there is, you know, all the things that they could have, you know, modern audiences these days are very demanding. And I think opera does a really good job of delivering something that everyone can sort of, everyone can appreciate. And when I spoke with Lorena Gore this week, she really, she sort of reinforced that belief as well. And I suppose when we were talking, one of the things that sort of became apparent was this notion that in this particular production, getting the audience involved was really important. So I'm going to play you the second part of the interview with Lorena Gore. Wonderful interview, because she's just a wonderful lady. So you're on The Fool and the Opera on Joy 94.9. In this particular opera, the fourth wall is kind of removed, and, you know, does it make it easier for you then to connect?
There is definitely dialogue going on with some of the characters, such as Papageno. He definitely has a lot of things that can be directed towards the audience, and they're very much a part of the production as well. They're sort of as a watching audience, yeah.
So let's talk about the Queen of the Night aria, because it is a very popular aria, and it's quite a dark aria, and you're being quite, I suppose, mean and vicious.
This is the second aria that she sings to her daughter, and she's basically saying to her she must go and kill Sarastro, who's sort of taken Pamina, who's her daughter, under his wing. She must go and kill him so that she can have the Circle of the Sun, which is something that Sarastro has that she wants for power. So it's quite strongly worded. She sort of says that, you know, you have to do this for me, or I'll basically disown you as my daughter. So it's great because it's all written into the music. It's very dramatic, and there's lots and lots of kind of fiery notes. And it's actually really great to do a role that's so strong in character. Mm. It's quite different to the sort of things that I would normally play, because as a coloratura, you do lots of sort of feminine roles, giggly roles, you know, very happy things. And to do something where it's a character that's really quite mean, quite evil, Yeah, it's good fun.
Yeah, I was going to say, because you don't seem like a very mean or evil person.
I have a deep inside. I reach inside myself and pull it out for this role. Yeah, it's good fun.
So it sounds like it is a lot of fun to play the villain.
Play the baddie. Mm. Definitely. Yeah, no, it's a challenge, but it's fantastic fun. And yeah, although it is hard sometimes when you're trying to be mean to another character and you like them so much as a person, you sort of really have to override what you feel in normal life for them and just kind of remember that it's all acting.
When we interviewed Jonathan Summers, who plays the great villain Iago in Otello, he said that as soon as he puts on the costume, that's when the villain starts.
Actually, that's so true, because this costume is so different to what I would wear in normal life. I have a platinum blonde wig with sort of lots of, it's almost, yeah, like a, my husband said it looks a bit like a Christmas tree ornament at the top of the head. It's sort of lots and lots of crystals, and it's the most amazing costume, and the makeup as well is quite strong. So as soon as you do have your makeup and costume on, you definitely feel like you can inhibit your character a lot better.
And when you're on stage, is there a moment where you kind of get just lost in the character?
I try and do that every time.
Yeah.
Every time I hear the music, I try and just think about the character, what she's thinking, and you really, they're one, the music and the drama, they're so intertwined that you sort of do really, when you're singing, it's such an exhilarating thing that you try and really just get wrapped up in the whole characterisation.
You've sung the role in Sydney. What have been some of the feedback that you've gotten?
Oh, just that people just come back and they sort of say, wow, it's really high, isn't it? I remember singing this, though. I did actually this role in sort of short form for Schools Company in Sydney, and that's actually singing it for children. And so we kind of did an amended version of the Magic Flute. It was much shorter. We only sort of sang bits of each aria. But I remember coming out after the show, we were all packing up the show, and they would all be at recess or lunch. And I'd often hear the kids singing the music in the playground. Just sort of, they'd heard it once, and they would just start singing it. It's incredible how children respond to this as well. That, you know, the Mozart is just the most incredible music that really does appeal to people of many ages.
Mm. Now, this sort of notion of singing in Italian and English is an interesting one, because I understand that language is completely different, because with Italian you sort of end with vowels, where it's O-R, and with English you end with a consonant, which is that the sort of the difficulty of singing in English?
It depends on the production and whether it was originally written in that language. When you're looking at an opera like we're doing The Magic Flute in German, but we're doing all the dialogue in English, which is great because in terms of the sung work, there are surtitles, so people can sort of see what, you know, if they don't speak the language, they can sort of read the surtitles, which when you're singing, you sort of repeat things a little bit anyway, which is great because from a vocal point of view, singing things in their original language is always a little bit easier because that's how the composer wrote it, and they allowed for that with the vowels. And so when you're singing a difficult passage, you know, they often pick a word that's a little bit easier, which you don't always get with an English translation. But then there are operas which have been written in English, which are the same in terms of they're a little bit easier to sing because that's the language that they're written in. So it doesn't really make a huge difference unless it's an adaptation.
So the spoken bits that you're saying are spoken in English in The Magic Flute. Is that sort of part of that engagement that you were talking about before? Sort of Papageno talks to the audience?
And exactly. Yeah, well, he talks to himself a lot, which is kind of directed out at the audience. It's Papageno's a great role. It's the comic role. This opera's fantastic in that it kind of has a little bit of everything. It has a little bit of comedy. And it sort of has the lovers, and they're quite serious. And then the character I play, the Queen of the Night, she's just a little bit crazy. And Sarastro, who again is very serious. So, and then it's got, you know, my husband actually came to see it, and he's not an opera singer, and he's a graphic designer, so he has a very normal job. Right. And he really enjoyed it because he said it sort of has a little bit of everything. It has the comic aspect, it has the music, which is lovely, and then it has legs on the wall and a bit of, you know, fire breathing, and there's lots of little special effects in this opera that just make it really fun and interesting production to be a part of.
Well, it sounds like such a fascinating opera that just really is just must see. So
yeah, well, I like to come out and watch in the audience when I can sort of get away, so I think it's definitely one that will appeal to like people of all ages as well, because the music, Mozart, is so it's just lovely. It's very tonal and it's just really beautiful music. So I think if you haven't seen an opera before, this would be a good one to come and see.
We look forward to seeing your Melbourne debut as the Queen of the Night.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for joining me on the show today.
Pleasure to be here.
Now, I've got another SMS in that has said, yes, please play the Queen of the Night aria. Thanks from Paul. So thanks for texting, Paul. And, okay, well, I've had two votes, so an overwhelming amount of response saying that they want to hear, of people saying that they want to hear the Queen of the Night aria. And it's 100% yes, so I will play it. Now, because it is National Youth Week, and because I always like to sort of tout this program as, you know, old people music at young people volume, I have found a rocked up version of the Queen of the Night aria. So you're going to hear a very gutsy version of this aria, and it is The Fool in the Opera on Joy 94.9. Yeah, you're on The Fool in the Opera on Joy 94.9, where opera and rock and craziness meets. And I don't think you'd find a more electric Queen of the Night version there. And that was, of course, Angelica, who was a Latin American performer who was popular in the 90s and sort of fell out of popularity shortly after that, which is, I don't know what that says about her as a performer, but I kind of like that track. I like to mix things up a bit, and that's certainly one of those mix-up little tracks we've got. And one of the other things I always like to mix up with is, of course, a little bit of a jazz track to end the night. And this week we've got, because there is, you know, we're talking about the Magic Flute, there is a lovely little jazz version of the Priest's March from the Magic Flute, and this is called Preachin', and I've got Novel Cuisine, and I always play a jazz track to finish off because, of course, we've got Kirsten, who is coming up with Bent Notes right after this, so it's going to be a night of wonderful music as well. So stick around, and this is Preachin'. Joy 94.9. It is The Fool and the Opera, and it's come to that time of the night again where we've got to say goodnight, because all good things must come to an end, no matter how much you like or dislike this program. Now, I said that before I would find out what De Hollerakt means, and it actually is only part of the entire name of the song. De Hollerakt kocht in meinem Herzen is the whole name of the song, and it means literally in German, "Hell's vengeance boils in my heart," which is a very good, it's kind of it really sort of encapsulates the sort of terror that you should be feeling when you're listening to that particular aria, and it's a beautiful little aria. So The Magic Flute is out at the Art Centre at the moment. You should check it out. It's a wonderful production. So thanks very much to Lorena Gore, who came and did the interview with us. And of course, coming up after the program is going to be Bent Notes with Kirsten. It's going to be a lovely night of jazz, so stick around for that. And I will see you next week, same time, same bat time, same bat channel. Same Fledermaus time, same Fledermaus channel, as Mozart would say. And this has been The Fool and the Opera on Joy 94. I'm going to stretch this out so I can get the fanfare done properly on Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to the Joycast of The Fool and the Opera from Joy 94.9 Community Radio. You can find more Joycasts and the program blog at joy.org.au/The Fool and the Opera. The Fool and the Opera is produced by Dan Vo and Jed Gilbert, thanks to the support of Joy's sponsors and members. Please help support it by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.